Welcome to the CRE Exchange Podcast, where we deep dive into the global trends and challenges of CRE professionals across all sectors of the commercial real estate industry. We engage with experts in the space to bring you innovative insights into industry practices, opportunities, and challenges to better inform your decisions. This episode is brought to you by Altus Group, a global leader in asset and fund intelligence for commercial real estate.
Welcome, everyone, to another exciting episode of CRE Exchange. I'm Cole Perry, your host and Associate Director of Research at Altus Group, a leading provider of asset and fund intelligence. I'm joined by Omar El-Tarai, our U.S. Director of Research. Today, we'll have a special episode for you. We'll be sharing some of the biggest shifts and surprises from the latest edition of the CRE Industry Conditions and Sentiment Survey. Omar, it's great to be with you.
Glad to be here and excited to talk about these Q3 results with you. But before we dive into the findings, Cole, do you mind sharing with our listeners a little bit of a quick recap about the survey objectives and structure?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. This particular iteration of the survey was conducted between mid-July and early August, gauging opinions during the third quarter of 2024. We got about 500 responses from more than 100 different firms across the U.S. and Canada, across all CRE organization types, many different functional areas. Respondents were largely seasoned professionals in the industry with the average number of years of experience at 18. So the survey is conducted by the research team across the US and Canada in an effort to provide insight into market conditions, sentiment, metrics, and various issues impacting the CRE industry. So Omar, how about we dive right in? What were some of the biggest things you saw or biggest shifts you saw between this and the last survey?
Certainly. And for this conversation, we're going to be focused on just the U.S., but we do conduct the survey really across North America and Canada. In terms of the U.S., some of the most notable changes that we saw in Q3 were really the shifts in the reported current and expected capital environment over the coming year. So even though this survey was closed before the Federal Reserve's first rate cut announcement on the 18th of September, the survey participants were expecting some big changes ahead. And while capital considerations like the cost and availability of capital have been top of mind and really have been a significant headwind for the CRE industry as a whole over the last 2 years and have really, you know, thrown a wet blanket on transaction activity and been a real challenge for capital allocators, the recent survey results show some optimism about the future and really a positive shift in the capital conditions. And one area that we saw this positive shift was in all-in interest rates. So first, in terms of the current capital conditions and interest rates, the survey results showed that on a quarter-on-quarter basis, all-in cost of debt was relatively stable over the quarter, so third quarter compared to second quarter, and increased slightly across different loan terms. The average all-in interest rates across the five main property sectors, so that being hospitality, industrial, multifamily, office, and retail, it did move up slightly on the quarter for both 5 and 10 year loan products. However, the majority of that upward movement was really a result of higher interest rates reported for hospitality. Now, if you strip the hospitality sector out of the overall average, it really was quite flat or within about 10 basis points from the second quarter results. And in terms of the expectations for cost of debt going forward, the survey results really showed that the 12-month forward view for all-in fixed rate financing across strategies really moderated, declining about 14 basis points across various fund strategies, including Core Plus, Value Add, and Opportunistic. Hopping over to the equity side of the capital equation, participants really noted that current targeted gross IRRs, or internal rates of return for newly launched funds, also generally increased quarter on quarter. Compared to the second quarter, the Q3 results really showed that the midpoint for gross IRRs targeted by new funds increased across all the property sectors, with the exception of self-storage and multifamily. The largest quarter on quarter increases were seen in hospitality and student housing. And so shifting over to the expectations for equity, and the cost of equity, the participants in the Q3 survey showed that net levered IRRs over the next 12 months will likely moderate. The average net levered IRR across funds is expected to be somewhere between 10 and 14%, really depending on the strategy. So core, closer to that 10%, and then opportunistic, near 14%. And these expected returns are down slightly from the prior quarter, but overall seem to be stabilizing. And then if we're just talking about the cost of capital, equally important to the cost of capital and kind of the other critical dimension to understanding what the capital environment looks like is capital availability. And that saw some meaningful shifts in the Q3 results as well. So first, we'll touch on kind of what the results were saying about the current conditions. And that's participants were indicating that current capital availability really continued to be quite limited. An example of this was seen on the debt side, where reported max loan-to-value ratios, or LTVs, were lower than the prior quarter, and minimum debt service coverage ratios, or DSCRs, were slightly higher. And this was especially true for office and hospitality. Taking a lower LTV and a higher DSCR together, that suggests that lenders becoming a little bit either more picky or are ultimately providing lower proceeds. And so that speaks to the constrained capital availability. And I called out office and hospitality because I thought those were interesting sectors that were showing similar trends in terms of these underwritten terms. But, I think office is, at least over the last 2 years, they've been kind of on opposite ends of the spectrum in terms of overall performance.
So one of the great things about the survey is actually that we can track capital availability expectations by source of capital. And so across debt and equity. And I would say that expectations for capital availability overall remain fairly mixed, but are broadly improving. So we ask respondents to tell us how available they expect various debt and equity sources to be over the next 12 months. And the most common response across all types of debt and equity capital sources was that they'd be somewhat available, which I take to mean that each is very situation and use case specific by respondent. But on the tails of the, we'll call it the availability spectrum, you do get some interesting figures. On the equity side in particular, 44% of respondents said that family office and individuals would be very available or extremely available. A similar 44% said the same for funds, whether that be PE or hedge funds. And on the debt side, 46% say that debt funds will be either extremely or very available. That was the highest for any source. On the flip side of that one, just 36% say banks will either not be available or are not at all going to be available. So where do we see big shifts? If you were to translate this into one figure, we'll call it net availability. So taking those who would say a capital source is extremely or very available, less those who say a source is not very available or not at all available, you can start to see some big swings through time. So net expectations actually did surge across all different sources of debt and equity. For example, though, if 80% said something would be available, but 20% said it would not, that's plus 60 net. So to give an idea of some of these figures, only bank lenders and mortgage REITs remain in net negative territory. So they have a net negative 22% and a net 5% expecting those sources to be available within 1 year. Responses over the past four quarters have actually shown really big improvements for debt capital, particularly from life insurers and securitizations, which have improved on net 52 percentage points and 63 percentage points since quarter four, 2023, a massive swing over the last year. What does this mean? Interestingly, a lot of respondents shifted what they told us was going to be their primary focus. So if they expect capital to be very available, we heard from a lot of them that they're looking to put it to work. So the percentage who cited deploying capital as a primary focus over the next 6 months actually surged 11 percentage points from 20% to 31% quarter on quarter. This means that half of all the respondents actually cited raising or deploying capital as their primary focus. A plurality, just 44%, said that managing existing exposures would be their top priority. So the percentage who cited being on pause or de-risking dropped from 5 and 6 percentage points, respectively. And I think the bottom line from all this data right here is that this is a dramatic turnaround from where we were in the fourth quarter of 2023, in which just 7% expected to be deploying capital within 6 months, and 57% said that managing existing exposures was a priority. So I'm a little curious to see what respondents are telling us they're going to be doing in the next 6 months, to be determined if that's what they actually do.
And dovetailing off that reported increase in plans to deploy capital, the reported near-term transaction intentions that we saw in the survey results rose notably in the third quarter, as a majority of survey participants stated that they intend to transact over the next 6 months. Respondents' near-term transaction intentions continued to increase through the third quarter, with 89% noting that they plan to buy and or sell over the next 2 quarters. This is the highest level that we've seen since we started this survey over a year ago. And while in past surveys and breakdowns on the podcast, we did see and highlighted meaningful differences between the reported transaction intentions of large and small institutions. But in this quarter, we generally saw increased transaction intentions just across the board and across all institutions. That was in part driven by the larger institutions coming back and signaling that they do plan on transacting in the near term. But also similar to prior quarters, the smallest institutions and smaller institutions do tend to be more of the net buyers. Part of the elevated near-term intentions to transact can partially be explained by the improved outlook for capital conditions ahead, but also maybe partially explained by the perception of current pricing that is seen across sectors and within the market. So for an fourth consecutive quarter, the reported characterization of pricing across various property sectors continued to shift away from overpriced, so the overpriced characterization, and towards a fairly priced characterization. So across the largest property sectors, participants increasingly described current pricing as being priced about right. The majority of respondents across 7 of the 11 property sectors that we survey and ask about chose the fairly priced characterization. Notably, hospitality and multifamily saw significant swings quarter on quarter away from being overpriced in the second quarter of 2024 to being much more fairly priced in this third quarter. However, bucking the trend and shift from overpriced to fairly priced, the single family residential and land and development property sectors still had majorities indicating that these sectors remain overpriced even through the third quarter.
So I think this is fairly interesting to pair with some of the stats that we gathered on property type performance, because whether or not potential investors view some particular sectors to be fairly priced, you know, you have to pair this with how they think it's going to perform. And I think multifamily is one of the ones that stands out here as particularly interesting. The outlook for multifamily is actually rebounding relative to where it's been in past quarters, but the outlook for the industrial sector is weakening. I'd also call out that the consumer-facing sectors, so hospitality and retail, are seeing a little bit of concern, which I think is fairly interesting to pair with the fact that it's moving back into this fairly priced category. But the third quarter actually marked the third consecutive drop in the percentage citing industrial as a potential best performer. It slipped from 67 to 58% on the quarter, so 9 percentage points. And as I mentioned, multifamily sentiment has rebounded pretty sharply. So 69% now consider it among the best performing asset types, or expect it to be among the best performing asset types, a whopping 24 percentage point improvement, while the percentage seeing it as a potential worst performer actually dropped from 21% to 10%. So seeing some movement on both extremes there. And concerns are emerging in those consumer-facing sectors, like I mentioned. So hospitality, one that Omar, you just called out, and retail, So these saw a -8% and -16% drop in the percentage, citing them as best performers, even though their worst performer ratings remain relatively flat. So not seeing a lot of movement on the other end of the extreme. Interestingly, office saw a slight improvement. 85% expected to be among the worst performing sectors, but the fraction was down 8% from the second quarter. So a little different there. Now you can translate this figure again into kind of a net expectation figure as well. So the share of responses indicating a sector might perform best, less responses suggesting a sector may perform worst, translating this into one number. And the shift was most pronounced for hospitality. So net expectations deteriorated 19 percentage points. For self-storage, you saw net expectations deteriorate 12 percentage points. For industrial, 11. And life science, down 10. It's not one we've talked about too many times when reviewing some of these results before. But in that net figure, the multifamily sector actually rebounded 10 percentage points. And it was the only such improvement that measured in the double digits in the third quarter.
Turning to some of the biggest takeaways that we've seen, I would note that having gone through all the survey results, I was quite impressed by the swing in anticipated outlook for the future capital conditions. And I think not only did we see this in what is expected to be the cost of capital, but also the availability of capital. And I think this has ultimately given rise to some renewed optimism really seen throughout the survey responses. And it seemed to really kind of shift the sentiment of the overall outlook that we gather from like the collective responses across the participants. And while the start of the rate cutting cycle is no panacea, it seems to be an affirming signal, really, that's very well received and broadly felt. But Cole, what was one of the big takeaways that you got out of all this data?
Yeah, Omar, I think I had a fairly similar takeaway from a different perspective. What I took away was that sentiment really appears to be rounding a corner in a lot of respects. We tend to structure these questions in a way that captures a long time horizon, whether that be 6 months or a year. And while we've seen some quarter on corner, like big snaps in sentiment, particularly surrounding the end of 2023, these aren't so much looking like big snaps, but sustainable positive shifts in sentiment and expectations. You've seen this over the last couple of quarters. Take capital availability expectations, one of the numbers that I just covered. Almost all sources are expected on net to be more available than not for the first time since launching the survey. Nearly 90% of respondents say they'll transact in some form. We previously saw unanimous concern about cost of capital and inflation and property level concerns, but a lot of priority issues are now shifting towards broader kind of non-CRE specific issues. So I have one big question, and I mentioned this at the top of the podcast, and that's if this is going to translate into action and when it's going to show up in the data. We ask respondents, for example, if they will transact, not how much. And so I think now that there's one 50 basis point interest rate cut behind us, like you mentioned, sure, this might help a marginal amount of deals eventually pencil out or a marginal amount of development pencil out, but it's not going to change everything overnight, and it's not going to dramatically alter long-term strategies of a lot of existing CRE players. So it took a lot of time for our industry to cool down. I think it's going to take a lot of time for it to heat back up, but we'll have to wait and see if some of these sentiment figures translate into actual action and when they're going to show up in the data. But I think that was my big takeaway, but there are also a few surprises that I wanted to focus on. And the one question we asked is about priority issues. And this is asking folks to tell us if a particular topic is going to be a priority issue or concern for them over the next 12 months. And interestingly, not surprisingly, cost of capital did wane a bit, but concern about capital availability did grow. I think that runs counter to some of the other stats we were looking at. But the major property-specific concerns continue to be noted by about half of respondents. So cost of capital, like I said, was a concern of 60% of respondents. The only issue identified by a majority of people during quarter three, capital availability was a significant concern, ranking in third at 47% citing it. And it showed a notable tick up on the quarter, 6%. Property-specific issues were fairly widely acknowledged. Operating costs were a priority for almost a majority of respondents, reflecting a 3% increase from the second quarter. And concerns about insurance costs were noted by 44%, but this was a huge decrease from the second quarter. Tenant retention was a steady concern, 38% of respondents identifying it as priority. Hardly a lot of surprises in there, but I did want to call out that community-related concerns are rising to the forefront, such as housing and housing cost and availability, employment and income growth, and zoning reform all saw notable 6 or 7 point tick ups on the quarter. I did want to call out property level issues in this sense as well. The share concern about taxes declined nearly 10 percentage points. And the percentage citing insurance costs actually declined 16 percentage points, the most of any issue. So insurance is becoming less of a concern. One way to interpret this, though, is that owners are just beginning to stomach the cost of new premiums. I expect, especially considering some of the horrific weather-related events of the past week, that this may shoot back up in the next quarter now that it's back on top of people's minds. We also ask about weather risk, and fewer than 10% said so this quarter or in quarter three. And that was actually unchanged from quarter two. I expect that might change. Omar, do you have a big takeaway from this quarter that would surprise you?
Yeah, we ask a set of direction and conviction type of questions that ask the participants to indicate over the next year what direction do they think the metrics are going to move and how strongly they hold those beliefs. What surprised me is that there are a lot of significant views that are held broadly but quite weakly, or at least they're held with much less conviction than before. As an example of that, the cost of capital, as well as views on cap rates and CRE distress, they've all seen a pretty big shift in terms of declining conviction over the last year, but still are anticipated to have meaningfully large or substantial moves over the next year looking forward. And so that waning conviction is something that I'm tracking, particularly when the participants in the survey expect big moves, but you've seen less and less conviction with those kind of big move calls. However, on the flip side of that, we did see a number of indicators see increased conviction, and one of those being availability of capital. So you generally saw the participants expecting significant increase and improvement in terms of the availability of capital, but also you've seen this surge in overall conviction in that view. Totally makes sense now that we're in that rate cutting cycle, even though the rate cutting cycle is more focused on the cost dimension of capital as opposed to the availability of capital, but they do interact. And then the other area where you saw this big jump in terms of this renewed force or higher confidence is in transaction and investment activity. So I think you can make sense of that, where cost of capital is coming down, pricing is looking better, and you've had this kind of pent-up demand that is signaled in the respondents that are indicating that they're ready to deploy. But not all of the indicators are really held with that same level of faith. The evolution of the collective confidence has been something that I was kind of surprised looking at in these results, and that we call out ultimately in the report as well.
So Omar, that is nowhere near as many of the data points that we actually cover in the report. So how can folks access the full results if they'd like to?
Yeah, so the easiest way will be to see the link in the show notes below this podcast. Otherwise, you can find it on the Altus website or simply go to any browser or search and you can type in Altus CRE Conditions and Sentiment Survey and hit search, and that'll take you to the survey homepage where you can find this and past survey results. But you can also sign up to participate in future surveys. Because this is a quarterly survey and it's open to all CRE participants and practitioners, I highly encourage you to participate because it will help make the findings more robust and useful. But then as a bit of a carrot, we also share the underlying data in an Excel format for the participants who do complete the survey and provide their contact info to receive that.
Excellent. Omar, I think that is all the time we have today. But before we sign off, I want to share with our listeners how they can give us some feedback on the show. If you would like to leave us a message or a feedback via voice recording, there's going to be a link in the show notes that you'll find to do so. I'd also encourage you to rate and comment on the show the old-fashioned way on your preferred podcast platform, or feel free to do it the extra old-fashioned way by sending us an email at altusresearch@altusgroup.com. We would love to know what topics you'd covered on the program. In the meantime, Omar, it's been a pleasure, and I look forward to speaking with you on another episode of CRE Exchange. Have a good one.
Thank you for listening to the CRE Exchange podcast powered by Altus Group. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a 5-star review and be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. This episode is brought to you by Altus Group, a global leader in asset and fund intelligence for commercial real estate. At Altus, we bring together capabilities across technology, analytics, valuations, tax, and development advisory services. We are guided by bold thinking, integrity, and inclusivity, partnering with CRE professionals to maximize opportunities with exceptional service experience. Find out more at altusgroup.com.